Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Purushottam 2010, Classes in Radhika and Brahmastuti, Chapter 14, Verse Number 1. I'm trying to understand the 18 different points which Brahma realized, which proved to him, and he's trying to tell us to prove to the world, how Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather, he is Purushottam, the Supreme Purushottam, although sometimes other forms of Godhead like Ram or Vishnu are called Purushottam. For example, everyone's heard Maryada Purushottam. Because generally they use Purushottam to mean God, Bhagavan or Purushottam. But we use Purushottam to mean specifically and only Krishna. Because he actually meets the definition of the Uttam Purusha. Everyone is Prakriti, all jivas are energy or Shakti or Prakriti. And God or Bhagavan, Vishnu Tattva, they are the only Purusha. Ekala Ishvara Krishna Arasavibhritya. So the Ishvara is Vishnu, Ram, Krishna, the avatars, and everyone else is a servant. So people do use the term, and they even write the term Ram as Purushottam, or Vishnu as Aishwarya Purushottam. Aishwarya Purushottam Vishnu. It's true, he is Purushottam, meaning God, but Brahma, who is the head of the Sampradaya, wants to establish that Krishna in Vrindavan is a little coward boy with some yogurt in his hand. He is the supreme Purushottam. He alone is the supreme Bhagavan, or supreme Purushottam. So this is verse 1, we're describing his beauty. And we heard some nice, the verse itself, which he spoke in the same tune as Brahma Samhita, is beautiful. We heard about, just to review, we heard how he has a beautiful blue body like a dark rain cloud in the monsoon season. And his dhoti, rather than simply being yellow, is brilliant and flashing and shining yellow like a lightning bolt. Tadit. And we know from the Radhakripa Kataksha that Radharani is described, her complexion is described like that. Tadit Sivarna Champaka Pradipta Gaura Vigraha. Gaura Vigraha. Gauranga Mahaprabhu Ki Jai. Gaurangi Radharani Ki Jai. So that Kanti, that golden Kanti, Gauranga Kanti, or Gaurangi Kanti, Krishna painted his body, got a paint job, and covered over his Abra Vapu. His Abra Vapu, which means his dark blue body, became Gora Anga. Gora became beautiful golden. Gauranga Vapu, a beautiful golden body, took on the Kanti, or the color of Radharani. It's marvelous and beautiful to see. And then rather than wearing all the opulence and opulent accoutrements and ornaments and crowns and fabulous golden crowns and diamond-studded crowns of Purushottam Ram or Vishnu, Krishna, Purushottam Krishna Vrindavan rather mocks the other forms of Godhead by his Aishwarya, his opulence, his poison gunja berries for earrings and peacock feathers fallen on the ground from peacocks that have molted their feathers. He picks up a dirty peacock feather and sticks it on the top of his hair and his top knot. Shira Chudamani. And his friends pluck some leaves from some tree, any tree here and there, and string a garland with a little skinny vine as string, serving as string. And then they say, Krishna, we have this beautiful mala for you. And he says, wonderful. And it has no fragrance and no color, dark green leaves. And Krishna parades around with that as if it's some victory garland made of celestial flowers from Swargaloka. This is Krishna. Then what does he eat? Does he sit down at a formal dining table with a crystal dining table like the kings of Rajasthan? What to speak of what the demigods must eat on and what Vishnu must eat on? A crystal diamond, a crystal solid crystal dining table embedded and studded with rubies and diamonds and covered with the rarest silk, dinner table cloth or whatever it is, and all the finest china and gold plates and gold spoons embedded with rubies. But what does Krishna use for his plate, for his dining plate, to eat his food, his left hand? He uses his left hand, not a golden plate, not a silver plate, not a banana leaf, not a lotus leaf. He uses his left hand as his dining plate. Very opulent, you know, his left hand. He puts his yogurt and rice there and then eats off of that. Whereas Vishnu and Ram, they eat off gold plates, diamond-studded gold plates. We're amazed. As Brahma is amazed and astounded to the point of fainting and illusion, submerging, Vimohan Samudra Magana. Vimohan Samudra Magana. Samudra means ocean. Magana means to submerge or drown in an ocean of bewilderment. He was drowning in an ocean of bewilderment. So this wearing garlands of various flowers. So we went through the verse and we were discussing it. It says, where Brahma is glorifying verse 1 of Brahma Stuti, chapter 14. Oh Krishna, you're so beautiful and attractive and so unique. There's no other godhead or form of Vishnu like you. So sweet, so adorable, so charming, so cute, so attractive, so cavalier, so exciting, so different, so free, so unrestrained. On one side, you appear as Maryada Avatar, as Maryada Purushottam. Very strict, walk straight, sit straight, talk straight, act straight. To the extent of throwing your wife around just because someone falsely criticizes you and her relationship with you, and incriminates her or intimates that maybe she's not faithful, then you reject Sita just because of a dobi's few words. And the words of a dobi mean nothing to anyone. And you're the emperor and you took it seriously and threw away your wife, and she was pregnant at the time. This is really straight, too straight. And you're glorified. But look at you, Krishna. You're so wonderful and amazing. You have a cowherding stick and a buffalo horn and a flute. And you stand beautifully with a morsel of food in your hand. This is Lakshmi Sri Mridupade Pashupangrajaya. Mridupade, soft feet. Pashupa, the cowherd. Nanda Maharaj. Angajaya, the beautiful way that Sri Krishna is the son of Nanda Maharaj. This is very nice. There's so many ways. Sometimes you must have heard the term Nanda Sutta. You must have heard this term. Sutta means son of. Jagannath Sutta. Jagannath Mishra Sutta, the son of Jagannath Mishra. Or Shachi Sutta. Have you heard this term? Shachi Sutta means the son of Mother Shachi. So Yashoda Sutta. There's so many beautiful ways in Sanskrit to describe. So here Brahma, being such a scholar, the Mahajan, he's the Mahajan, Swayambhur Naradas Shambhu, he's a Mahajan, Swayambhu, and self-born Brahma, the head of the Sampradaya, is so adroit and so intelligent and talented speaker and understanding and synthesizing all the philosophy and speaking in such, he's not only speaking his revelations, but in such a beautiful poetic way. Perfect meter, perfect rhythm, perfect chandas, poetry and rag and everything. And he's describing, and what a wonderful way he's saying. He's saying, Pashupa Anga Jaya. It's called a sandhi, a combination of different Sanskrit words, or four or five words clubbed together. So Pashu means animal. Of course, you've heard Prabhupada said, people that don't serve Krishna, they're dwi parupashu. Very common, Prabhupada says, dwi parupashu. They're simply dwi. Dwi, it means two. Two-legged animals. Dwi para. Para means leg. They're walking on two legs like human beings. Animals walk on four legs. Beasts, tigers, cows, animals. Beasts walk on four legs, charapada. Humans walk on doipada. But animals simply are engaged in eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Ahara nidra maitun bayam. So human beings that simply center their existence around ahara, eating, ahara nidra, sleeping, mitun, sex, enjoyment, and bayam, fighting, defending, arguing, quarreling, over every little thing, then they're simply animals. That's what animals do. So Prabhupada said, you're not a two-legged human being, a Purusha. You're a two-legged animal, a very strange creation. Every animal has four legs. Dvipada Pashu. Swarid varoshta karyai samstuta purusha pashu. Pashu, animal. So now, pa means protector. Gopal. Pal means pal. He's a pal of the gopas. He's a pal. Pal means someone who protects you. Gopal. G-O-P-A-L. Gopal. Go cow. Go senses. Go gopis. Go land. Go Vrindavan. Go Braja. So Krishna is protecting the cows, protecting the gopas, the young and old, everyone. Protecting the gopis, protecting the gopas, protecting the land, protecting Govardhan, saving Govardhan, using Govardhan to protect others. And protecting the land, go means land, protecting the land of Vrindavan from Rakshasas who want to destroy it, or bewildered demigods and envious demigods, proud demigods who want to flood and destroy all of Vrindavan. Indra was so incensed at not getting his puja. Hey, you didn't do my artik. I'm going to... He said, Sambartika, destroy Vrindavan! Destroy! So that means he wants to kill Vrindavan. Kill the land of Vrindavan, isn't it? If you nuke Vrindavan with 20 nuclear bombs, I mean, the earth is not going to disappear, but there'd be a lot of mess in Vrindavan. 20 nuclear bombs fall in Vrindavan, big holes everywhere and fire, and be like a charcoal piece of toast. Look like a piece of toast on the surface of the earth if 20 atom bombs hit Vrindavan. And what to speak of it, nobody on, you know, that's what's left. Everything else would melt. Steel melts, everything melts, and it vaporizes in a second. The heart center where you drop an atom bomb, everything disappears. Push. If a little jet fuel falls on a trade center and it burns the thing into ashes in 2 hours, what to speak of atomic bomb? It's called vaporize. The center point where, you know, 20 mega, if it lands here within 10 kilometers, turns into vapor. Sky, you know, if they drop one atom bomb, a small one, in the middle of Manhattan, you come back an hour later, it's just, where's Manhattan? There's not even any ashes. It's so hot that the ashes, there's no ashes. That's a lot. It's like 50,000 degrees Fahrenheit or something, the heart center. I mean, it's inconceivable. It's like if you boil water, which is 212 degrees Fahrenheit, 100 degrees centigrade. After 10 minutes, what's in the pot? Nothing. Right? Where'd it go? Vapor. Turned into vapor, right? It's 100 degrees centigrade. That's water turns into vapor. Steel, cement, bricks, they turn into vapor. That takes 10 minutes. But imagine if it's 10,000 degrees centigrade. So, Nitai Gaur. You get the chant, you say, ha! You don't even finish one mantra. Ha! Bye-bye, Nitai Gaur. Golok Prapti. I mean, the end, final moment can come in 1 second. A bullet kills you in 1 second. What to speak of, on a bomb lands on your head. And everybody's got these things in their back pocket, like firecrackers. Like little kids, and you know, and they go around firecrackers. Hey, go throw off a few firecrackers. They have atom bombs in their back pocket, like little kids, and they're just as foolish and unpredictable as kids. So the precarious nature of the modern world is really precarious. And all we have to say to all these terrible things is chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Now and forever. Hare Krishna. Sri Krishna Bhagavan ki jai. Sri Krishna Mahamantra ki jai. So he says, Pashupa, the protector of the animals. So the emperor of Vrindavan or the king of Vrindavan is Nanda Maharaj. So he's the protector. He's the Pashupa. Krishna, he's not busy with the tigers and deer and everybody. He's not responsible. He's just a Yuvaraj. He's a prince. He's a Vaishya prince. He's called, at the age of 6, he was given charge of the cows. He got the name Gopal. Okay, you protect the cows and calves. Boss. But who's protecting the tigers from all the poachers? And who's protecting the turkeys and vultures and chickens and all the animals and deer from the hunters? All these crazy people. Well, Nanda Maharaj, he's the Praja. Praja means Praja. Ja means birth. Pra means under your rule. Who's ever born under your rule is a Praja. They're to be protected by the king, everyone. So he's the Pashupa. Pashupa, the word Pashupa refers to Nanda Maharaj. Pashupa Anga. What does Anga mean? Limb, part, extension. Pashupa Anga means a limb of the protector, a limb of the protector or a part of the protector of the animals. And Ja means Janma, means to give birth, Janmasmi. Pashupa Anga Jaya. This is a name for Krishna. Beautiful, isn't it? Say, oh, you're Nanda Sutta. You're Yashoda Sutta, the son of Nanda. So he's saying, yes. So I've realized that this guy that hangs out with the animals all day, and his father's the king of the animals, like we say, Rikshiraj, king of the bears. Jambavan, king of the bears. So he must have a bear's face. So does Nanda Maharaj have an animal's face? No. Or like half animal and half human being? No. He's a full human being with a salt and pepper beard. Nectar Devotion says he has salt and pepper beard, which means a little black, a little white. He gave birth to Krishna when he was 87 years old. And that's why everyone was intentioned. Our king has no son. And you're 45, you know, 60 years of marriage or whatever, 90, whatever, no child. Six. And Yashoda was 79. And they were old. Because they were just living, you know, in the previous age, hardly like at the age of Kali, just at the end. You know. And it's human Leela, so they were surprised and amazed, and they had a son at an old age. There was so much rejoicing. So in a similar way, Jamavan, he's the king of the bears, but he's not a bear. Otherwise, how does his daughter become Krishna's queen in Dwarka? Krishna married a bear. Jamavati's a bear, beautiful bear. You heard of the heiress to the throne. She's the bearess. The heiress. She's the heiress to the estate. So Jamavati's the bearess. No, she's not a gorilla. Sometimes they say Jamavan's a gorilla. And he fought with Ram. He was in a monkey army of Ram. Is it there? Because he's a Chiranjeev. Jambavan was living in Treta Yuga, and Jambavan was living in Dwapara Yuga, and maybe he's still living in Himalayas or whatever. Called Chiranjeev. They live a long time, practically forever, but not forever. And he can take different forms if he need be. If Ravana, the enemy, can take different forms, why can't the allies? So Hanuman himself can take different forms. What's the proof of it? But it's not that he became small, it just became unnoticeable animal. You know, every palace is full of rats and cats. And what to speak, it's on the ocean, Lanka, so there's so much fish around and cats and this and that. Anyway, whatever. He changed his form. That's the point. Don't get lost on what form it was. He changed his form and he's a devotee, and so demons can change their form. So Jambavan maybe appeared in the fighting. He took a bear. He called the bears. He's the king of the bears. He said, come on, everybody. Get all the bears. Come. We're going to help the monkeys and fight this war. He gave that his order. Doesn't mean he's a bear. Nanda Maharaj is the king of the bears, and he's the king of the tigers and all the animals. He's a Pashupa. And the bears are there. And there's bears now in Vrindavan, there's bears in Koshi and all these places. So there's bears and tigers and everything. If you have a huge deep forest, Vrindavan's a huge deep forest, there's tigers, there's elephants, there's bears, there's everything. Even 500 years ago, there's tigers. There was that much forest 500 years ago, the tigers are drinking water from Radhakund, Shamakund. So now go back 5,000 years ago when there's forests in all directions because bears and tigers, they need acres and miles of forest to wander and roam. And elephants need like thousands and thousands of acres. So and it's a beautiful word, Pashupa Angajaya, Pashupa Angajaya. Lakshma Sri Mirdupade Pashupangajaya, Pashupangajaya. You are Pashupangajaya. Oh, Pashupangajaya. This is Brahma with his four heads. He says, actually, You, Pashupangajaya, you are a limb or the son of the king of the animals, and you're the supreme god of the whole universe. Running with animals. You're the son of the king of the animals. But you are actually, Shiva's under your control, Brahma, 33 crores of demigods are under your control, every universe is under your control, and you're this little five-year-old kid with yogurt in your hand. Don't have a crown, don't have a sacred staff, have some little stick under your arm that you picked up off the forest floor somewhere and carved it and use it for a little crutch or to rest on. And you are the king of kings, god of gods, lord of lords. Ishvara Paramakrishna. Purport. In the previous chapter, Brahma, the creator of the universe, tried to bewilder the supreme personality of God, and that's called Brahma Vimohan Leela, and this is Brahma Stuti, your prayers, before and after. How did he try to do that? By stealing his cowherd boyfriends and calves, but by a slight exhibition, yet bibhuti sattvam. Krishna says in Gita, yet vibhuti sattvam. Simply by it, all that you see, Arjuna, standing on this chariot in the middle of the battlefield, all that you see is all these virata rupa, universal form you're seeing with millions of planets and everything, is simply a spark of my splendor. Vibhutimat. Vibhutimat means splendor, opulence, power, grandeur, potencies. It's nothing. It's just simply a spark of my splendor. How splendorous is the sun planet? And take one spark of that sun ray, one spark of a huge bonfire. You have a huge bonfire, a huge fire. One spark jumps out. Oh, look at that spark. It's nothing. Insignificant. So all of this display of grandeur and opulence of Virata Rupa, which Arjuna saw on the battlefield, Krishna is saying, and Arjuna was ha-wa-ha-wa, and he's folding his hands, please remove this. I'm afraid, I'm so scared, and I'm sorry I ever ate with you and sat with you and slept with you and made friends with you, and you're God, you're everything, and please forgive me and this, that, and show me again your two-armed form and this and that. So Arjuna was totally baffled and astonished, and he was saying, and Krishna said, hey, relax. You haven't seen anything yet. This is nothing. There's only a spark of my splendor. I can really floor you if I show you more. What if I show you two sparks? You'll leave your body. I showed you one spark and you're fainting and recoiling in fear and trembling and trepidation. If I show you two sparks, you'll just faint, and three sparks, you're out. Krishna says, yad vibhuti sattva, this is only a spark of my splendor. So the same thing in this pastime, Vimohan Leela. Krishna just, okay, oh, you want to bewilder me? You stupid. Brahma, I gave you four heads to be smart. Because you have a big job to do. I've appointed you to create so many things in this little universe. I gave you four heads for this puny universe, which is unlimited in length and breadth. And another Brahma gave 16 heads. Another Brahma gave 1,000. Another Brahma gave 1 lakh of heads because he has a big office, a big kingdom, big universe, and needs more heads to figure it out and run the whole thing. And I gave you four heads to be smart and act intelligent, and you're acting so stupid. And you became completely bewildered. All right, you're trying to bewilder me? That's not very smart, Lord Brahma. What got into you? All right, boom! Krishna just snapped his finger. He just thought, oh, all right, I'm going to teach you a little lesson. Bing! And millions of Vishnus come flying out from all directions from Krishna's little tender baby body. Four-armed Vishnu is all opulence, and then I'm standing next to each Vishnu is another coward boy, and then it goes on and on, keeps expanding. More coward boys, more Vishnus, and Brahma's like, whoa! Wait a minute! Stop! Too much. By a slight exhibition of Krishna's own mystic potency, Brahma himself was completely bewildered. And now with great humility and devotion, he was offering his humble obeisances and prayers unto the Lord. It's a very nice side point in the short commentary here. which is simply seeing what's happening, we can learn something from this one sentence. This sentence is talking about bewilderment. It's talking about the activity of responding to that bewilderment by getting realization. Then you respond or reacting to that realization that you've attained by praying. So we from time to time in our life, we may pray or offer prayers to the Lord. And how do we do it? I often make a joke that Krishna says in Gita, Patram pushpam phalam toyam yo me bhakti priyachati taraham bhakti paritam ashnami prayatatvanaha. He who offers me with love and devotion, bhakti priyachati, he offers me with love and devotion a leaf, flower, fruit, or water, then I accept it. So I say, yes, Krishna is saying, please offer me with love and devotion, but usually we make an offering with lust and commotion. We're really lusty to eat something, and we can hardly wait to eat it. So that's the lust. And it's really commotion means lots of motion, which means lots of passion, means really fast. We're supposed to wait 20 minutes, but 20 becomes 10, 10 becomes 5, 5 becomes 1, 1 becomes 10 seconds. Ding, 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 Krishna. Or if you're on the road on traveling Sankirtan, you buy some dry fruit and you hold it up and say, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Jai Sri Krishna. And rip, rip. Mahaprasad ki, here, boys, take it. Because you're soldiers. Now, there's a different rule and regulation for soldiers fighting a battle than there are for soldiers at the barracks. When you're fighting a battle, there's mud on your shoes 24 hours a day, and maybe some drops of blood, your blood or your buddy's blood who died in your arms. This is wartime. But when you're at home at the base, every other day, the sergeant comes and says, soldiers, stand at attention. Hey, why aren't your shoes spit polished? Your boots have to be spit polished. It means you polish them and you go. You spit on them and take the rag. Spit polish. It's like that spit is everything. You can't be a good shoe shine boy unless you have a good spit. You have to spit all day on the shoes you shine. So everything's clean. Your clothes are pressed and looking smart. Well, then there you have all clothes you haven't washed in 2 weeks. Have no time to wash your clothes, hang them out on the line. There's no line, there's no wash. You're trying to survive. You're sleeping in the clothes, passing in the clothes, everything in the clothes. Just shooting and running and shooting and running. Boom, 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 boom. Mud all over your face. You haven't used any cologne or any aloe vera facial scrub. An apricot kernel tenderizer and all this stupid bogus stuff that people get bewildered about and spend thousands of rupees on, and nothing ever happens except you get wrinkled and old and die and blow all your money on this useless cosmetics that clutter up your bathroom for 500 years and do nothing but satisfy your false ego that is doing something, and fatten the pocketbooks of all the natural cosmetic companies. It's a grand illusion. It's called the cheaters and the cheated. You're born, you stay for a while, produce something useless things, then you dwindle and you die, and that's it. You look good for a few years, and you look bad for most of the time. you look like a bag of crap for about 5 years, and then you finally get some. You get some. A sculptor comes in, the architect comes in, and tries to make some kind of usefulness out of this bag of, you know, this hunk of clay and crap that's called a baby. Looks like a distorted piece of crap. And then the architect and the sculptor come in and try to fix his nose and stretch him out a little bit and carve eyeballs and stuff. And then after about, when he's finally about 10, he starts to look like a human being. It takes about 10 years to look like a human being. Then 5 more years, he gets a finishing touch, like, you know, the final, you know, candy flake enamel paint job and, you know, special wire wheel hubcaps. You know, then he's looking really smart by the time he's 15, and then that shiny new car look lasts till he's about 22, about 7 years, and then everything starts to sag and bag, and you try to pin it up, hold it up, you know, tie it up with different rubber bands and plastic and different things like that, because everything's starting to sag and fall down and look ugly. And you're saying, wait a minute, I just got this new car and it's already falling apart. And then from 22 to 80, it's 6 years of downhill. And like, oh, stop, stop, wait a minute. You know, this facial, that manicure. And hey, it's not working. I'm not getting younger. I'm actually getting older and fatter and uglier. My teeth are getting yellower. My eyes are getting duller. My skin's getting crept out. And my hair is falling out. And I'm dying it, passionately dying it twice a day. And it's still getting gray faster than I can dye it. Stop, stop. I don't want to get old. I don't want to die. Isn't this the madness? So he's telling us, you know, Brahma is telling us, he's doing what we do. We make offerings. We make prayers. And we make offerings with lust and commotion instead of love and devotion. We offer prayers. But he's, do we offer prayers with great humility and devotion? There's two things that are described in this tika here. That Brahma offered prayers and obeisances. Okay, please accept my, hey, Prabhu, please accept my humble obeisance. Acha, what's happening? Okay, Haribo. Like, wow, really, really sincere obeisances, really heartfelt, full of humble appreciation of the other Vaishnava and all his good qualities and nice service he's rendered, and really genuine feelings coming through your heart and mind and expressed in your posture of humility before the feet of this Vaishnava. It's told by Jiva Goswami that when two Vaishnavas offer obeisances to each other, that if that Vishnu comes, the Paramatma, Vishnu comes out of the heart of each Vaishnava and stands in between them and puts his hand on each person's head. He's standing there. As, you know, the two have head, they're facing, oh, please accept my obeisance. And one head of one devotee is facing the other, right? But if they're really devotees and really sincere and offering genuine obeisances with the qualities of humility and devotion, which Brahma did before Krishna, then, in the case of the devotees, when they're offering obeisances, Vishnu comes out and stands there, and he puts two hands on one devotee and two hands, because he has four. And he puts two hands on each devotee's head and gives them full blessings. What blessings? With increase of devotion, increase of bhakti, Krishna bhakti, Vishnu bhakti. And then when they get up, they feel happy, they feel blessed. It's not that they blessed each other by showing recognition and appreciation, but by showing proper Vaishnava etiquette backed by genuine feelings of humility and devotion that attracted the attention of Krishna or Vishnu, either one. And they come there to that very place and bless those devotees. This is bhakti in action. This is the dynamism, the dynamic aspect of bhakti. It's living, it's organic, it's a dynamic experience between the Lord and his devotees. The devotees are ever eager to serve the Lord with enthusiasm and surrender. And the Lord is ever eager to reciprocate with his devotees with blessings and love and compassion and guidance. So he's doing two things. He's offering obeisances, humble obeisances. Please accept my humble obeisances with pride and with great pride and commotion. I offered my so-called humble obeisances to my godbrother. Like, what's devotion? The opposite of devotion means dedication. With great pride and exploitation, with great pride and a mood of exploitation, I offered my, quote, so-called humble obeisances to my godbrother. And that may be how we offer obeisances to Krishna also. Love me, love my dog. So we go before the deities or before Krishna with great pride. Krishna, here I am, watch me, I'm going to offer obeisances. With great pride and mood of exploitation, we offer obeisances. But Brahma, he offered with great humility, submission, surrender, and loving feelings of attachment and attraction, devotion, with great humility and devotion, he offered his humble obeisances and prayers. So that's, how do we offer prayers? With humility and love. Surrender and devotion, sharanagati and bhakti. And how do we offer obeisances? With humility, genuine, really heartfelt humility and heartfelt love and appreciation. Devotion means appreciation. Devotion means respect. Devotion means a mood of service. Devotion means a seva bhava, a mutual appreciation, a mutual gratitude and love. This is the proper etiquette. Brahma is a teacher, is he not? He's the head of the sampradaya, he's Adi Guru. So he's teaching how to do bhakti, how to worship the Lord. Namaste or pranams are also a form of puja or worship, and prartana, vandanam, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, padasevanam, archanam, vandanam. Obeisances is padasevanam. Comes under the category of offering obeisances and worshipping and honoring the guru and the Vaishnavas is padasevanam. This is a little review. Although Brahma saw this fantastic display of opulence or Aishwarya, although Krishna is so simply dressed with mineral pigments and minerals and crushed mineral red and blue and yellow powders from the earth and earth and different rocks of Vrindavan, decorated in very simple and uncostly and costless way with just leaves and forest flowers and leaves and dirt from the ground, he looks so beautiful that he's astounded. Lakshmi Devi and astounded Brahma and Shiva and everyone is astounded by the beauty of Krishna and completely attracted. But then at the same time, although he's full of sweetness and approachability, anyone can approach him and not feel intimidated or afraid or awed by his majesty and wealth. At the same time, he's full of Aishwarya. So Brahma is a witness to that Aishwarya because he's seeing it. This little boy is 5 years old. And from his little five-year-old boy's body, which is not even developed, he's not even grown up. He's a kid. He's growing, still growing. At least in Vrindavan Leela, in Boma Vrindavan, he goes through three phases. He's not Nitya Kishore as he is in Goloka, in Aparikat Dham. He exhibits his speciality of growing up, Balya, Poganda, and Kishore, Navayovanam, finally. So from that little baby's body, Brahma is seeing millions and millions of totally opulent Vishnu, forearm Vishnu forms expanding right in front of his eyes. Although previous to this fantastic darshan, he had only seen darshan of Vishnu and Shirdakshai Vishnu Loka or Mahavaikuntha. He would have darshan of one Vishnu with all his grandeur and opulence and Aishwarya. But now he's seeing millions and millions of Vishnus. But is he awed by that? Is he overwhelmed by that and offering all his prayers and stutis directing him to those Vishnu forms? He says, no. I don't care about these Vishnu. I'm going to offer all my obeisances and all my prayers to this form. So by this experience that Brahma is having in this, that he had in the Leela, which he's recounting and remembering now afterwards, now that he's offering these prayers of repentance and appreciation and realization of Krishna's Purushottam Ta, his quality as being the Supreme Purushottam, he is teaching all of us that even if one sees, like Brahma did, all the Aishwarya in the whole universe packed up in one place, he's not attracted. At the same time, it shows this is the Aishwarya aspect. Krishna is Madhurya Purushottam, and Vishnu is Vishnu. Vishnu is Aishwarya Purushottam, and Rama is Maryada Purushottam. But this Madhurya Purushottam was so simple and so cute and so charming and so childlike. He's a child. He's not a grown man, he's a 15-year-old kid forever. He never becomes 20 or 100 or 1,000. He has more Aishwarya than all the Vishnus put together. And just one momentary display of his, a speck of his Aishwarya, which is contained within him, hidden and covered and buried by all that sweetness and beauty and charm, is this unlimited reservoir, this vast unlimited reservoir of inconceivable opulence. Achintya Shakti, inconceivable Aishwarya. It's like Karela with a vanilla ice cream coating. He has this sweet vanilla ice cream, and inside is this Karela. Karela is the Aishwarya. It's a little bitter, it's a little stinging, not so attractive, but everyone's attracted to ice cream. It's creamy and smooth and goes down easy. But when someone displays opulence, it's awe-inspiring. You tremble in fear and you become afraid. Arjuna is Gandiva Raj, Gandiva Dara. Soldiers, thousands of soldiers run away from him and he simply twangs his bow. He was cowering in fear and trembling in fear when he saw the Virata Rupa of Krishna. That small bit of vibhuti mat sattvam, that small bit of Aishwarya emanating from Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, that during the Virat Rup Darshan, chapter 11, universal form of Gita, this powerful hero, this Maharati, he was cowering in fear to see that opulence, such opulence from Krishna. But in Vrindavan, that opulence is just all concealed and covered by the sweetness. No one ever understands it or sees it. And Brahma is seeing it. This is the proof. Brahma is giving the proof and telling the whole world that Krishna is Madhurya Purushottam, but still, don't think that he's not Aishwarya Purushottam. He has more Aishwarya than even Aishwarya Purushottam. The Aishwarya Purushottam aspect of Bhagavan is Vishnu and Narayan. But Sarva Avatari, Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna, Sarva Avatari, all one Vishnu, not one Vishnu, 1 billion Vishnus are contained within him. And they can just with a desire, he can manifest millions of Vishnus in one spot. Now, is that Aishwarya or not? That's Maha, Maha, unbelievable, unlimited, Ananta Aishwarya. But it's all covered with a sweet cover. The most sweet and attractive, simple, beautiful coward boy of Vrindavan. Madhurya Purushottam Sri Krishna Ki. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he gives a wonderful illumination on this first verse of Brahma Stuti. So we'd like to read his contribution. He says, this chapter relates how Brahma, though maintaining a mood of reverence, Aishwarya Bhav, immersed himself in the great ocean of Krishna's sweetness, Krishna Madhurya Samudra Magana. Although he was respectful, still he became inundated. Even though he was drowned under the water, drowning the ocean of Krishna's Madhurya, Madhurya Samudra, Madhurya Sagar, he still, even though he's surrounded and drenched in that sweetness, he still kept his hands folded. He kept a reverential mood because that's his bhav, that's his nitya bhav, his sthayi bhav. He's not in Madhurya bhav, he's in Shantarasa and Dasyaras. After praising Sri Krishna with great devotion mixed with knowledge, Brahma asks some questions. Now Vishwanath speaks before, because this is a very, very important chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which very conclusively and exactly establishes the Siddhanta and the fact that over Shiva and Brahma and Vishnu and over all the forms of Vishnu, all the other forms of God, that Krishna is the Supreme Purushottam, and he's the Supreme. Not only is Vishnu supreme among the demigods, but Krishna is supreme among all the forms of Godhead. So Brahma is establishing that. So Vishwanath, understanding that this is an awesome task to undertake, to comment on this very deep and profound chapter of the Bhagavatam, because the whole Bhagavatam is leading up to the 10th canto, to describe this form of Godhead and that form of Godhead and this level of devotee and that level of devotee, Karma Mishra Bhakta and Jnana Mishra Bhakta. Then finally you get to Prahlad in the 7th canto, who is not Dhruva and he's not, you know, these other devotees that have various mixtures, but Prahlad is a Shanta Bhakta. He's in Shantarati. He has actually, the beginning of pure bhakti is with Prahlad, who absorbed himself in Vishnu Smaranam and attained perfection that way by remembering the Lord in Shantarati. There was no active service going on there, so there was no Dasyarati. So that's the beginning of pure bhakti in the 7th canto. Now, all the 9 cantos are leading to 2 things. One thing the 10th canto wants to teach us, that the topmost form of God, it is not Ram, who is described in the 9th canto, which many people believe, and not Vishnu and the various Vishnu forms and Leela avatars who are described in the other cantos, like Nisringa, etc. But it is Krishna, that little inconceivable, mysterious boy in Vrindavan. This is a monumental point of Siddhanta. The 10th canto is going to establish that point, that Krishna is the Supreme Purushottam, and as the previous 9 cantos have been presenting and describing various devotees and their level of attainment, whether they're demigods or children or whatever they are, what level of attachment and devotion they've attained for God, either in the form of Narayan, like Narada Muni, he attained attachment and darshan of Chaturbhuja Narayan in his heart, or Dhruva or Prahlad, etc., Rishabhadev and Jad Bharat and all these different devotees. What is their level? Different levels are described there. And finally, we're going to get to the 10th canto, which describes the topmost form of Bhagavan, Godhead, Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam, and also the topmost form of devotees, who are exhibiting the supreme and topmost form of attachment and devotion to the topmost form of Godhead. If you have the topmost form of Godhead, then you're going to have the topmost form of devotees. Not only that, the third thing that's established in the 10th canto is the topmost holy abode of the Lord. In the third canto of Bhagavatam, when you study, it talks all about Vaikuntha, the abode of Lord Narayan, the Aishwarya Dham, and talks about the Vaikuntha Vasis. They're all blue in color, and they all have four arms, and they all look just like Vishnu, except there's some difference. What's the distinctive feature that distinguishes the Lord, Vishnu, and Vaikunthanath from all the Vaikuntha Vasis? Well, he has some Srivats on his chest, and he has some silver hairs curling to the left. So there's, otherwise, oh, you're Vishnu? Oh, no, you're Vishnu. Oh, you're Vishnu. Because Priyad Bhagavatamrita brings this point out. When Gopakumara went to Vaikuntha, he started offering obeisances and prayers to all the Vaikuntha Vasis because he thought they were his Krishna, his Gopal. He said, hey, what are you doing? We're servants over here. Huh? You have Shank, Gada, Padma, everything you have? Yeah, okay, we have all this stuff. But these are just, we borrow these. These are just expansions of the original. Acha. So the different dhams are described, the different forms of God are described, and the different forms of devotees are described in nine cantos of Bhagavad. And then when you land at the 10th canto, the first place you land in is Vrindavan, which is the topmost place, and topmost dham and topmost devotees of that Purushottam Sri Krishna, and the topmost feature of Purushottam Sri Krishna, the Purnatam. This is Madhurya, Purnatam Madhurya. Purnatam Madhurya Purushottam Bhagavan Sri Krishna. But then we have Purnatara. Purnatara Madhurya Purushottam Krishna in Mathura. Then we have Purna Bhagavan, and Purnatara Bhagavan, and Purnatam Bhagavan. So then we have Purna Madhurya Mayi Purushottam Krishna in Dwarka. There's sweetness there in Dwarka, more than anywhere in Vaikuntha, and more than with Ram, but there's lots of Aishwarya. Then there's Krishna and Mathura, Purnatara Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, Purushottam and Mathura, and there's lots more sweetness than Dwarka, but also lots of Aishwarya. And then we come to Purnatam Bhagavan, Purushottam and Vrindavan, and it's absolute Madhurya. Leela Madhurya, Vena Madhurya, Rupa Madhurya, Prema Madhurya. And the Bhagavatam just, boom, it hits right there. You land up right in Vrindavan, right with the Brijavasis, right with Mother Yashoda. First you start with Mathura, Aishwarya, Aishwarya Mayi Vatsalya. Then you have Madhurya Mayi Vatsalya of Yashoda, contrasted with Yashoda Nanda, Devaki and Nanda on one side, with the Purnatara Bhagavan, and then you have Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj with the Purnatam Bhagavan and Vrindavan, Gokul. Big difference. So Vrindavan, we start with Vrindavan Leela, and then later we go down from there, so to speak. And Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami, is extracting that whole essence, and he describes in two parts, he describes the different abodes of the Lord, the different levels, he describes the different forms of the Lord, and he describes the different levels and hierarchy of devotees. Have you read? You must have read. So that's what the whole 12 cantos is all about, and he kind of compressed the whole thing in an amrit. If you milk is wonderful, but if you keep compressing it by heating it, you get burfi. And burfi is, if I have my choice, I'll take burfi. Any sensible devotee would prefer half a kilo of burfi over half a kilo of milk. Because half a kilo of milk is two glasses. Half a kilo of burfi is about 100 glasses of burfi. 100 glasses of milk. It's lots of milk. So Bhagavatam is 12 cantos, so many books compressed and cooked down into a big piece of burfi. big piece of transcendental Siddhanta Burfi, or Burfi Siddhanta, called Brihad Bhagavatamrita. It's a big Bhagavatam and full of nectar. Brihad means big. Or you can say it's a loud Bhagavatam. It's so many verses loudly proclaiming. Brihad means big. It also means loud. Brihad. So Brihad Bhagavatam, it's a loud Bhagavatam which is full of nectar, and it loudly proclaims the glories of Bhagavatam itself, and extracts and presents the nectar of the Bhagavatam itself, and also the Bhagavatas, Mahabhagavatas, and devotees, and Bhagavan. It's a very beautiful synthesis and summary of the entire Bhagavatam. This all being understood, then Vishwanath feels a little bit hesitant to, am I qualified to comment on such an amazing chapter of Siddhanta, the conclusion of all Vaishnava Siddhanta on the absolute truth? This is the perfection of ontology and theology to understand the Madhurya Mayi aspect of Bhagavan Sri Krishna and Vrindavan. Extremely esoteric, extremely mysterious, the greatest acharyas and demigods of the entire universe cannot understand. Indra didn't understand, Shiva didn't understand. He fought with Krishna in Dwarka Lila, Banasura. Although he understands, on one level, Shiva understands. But the demigods did Varuna get bewildered by Krishna? He kidnapped Nanda Maharaj. He got bewildered. All the greatest primal, there's 33 crores of demigods. Actually, there's 33 primal demigods. Indra, Chandra, Surya, Brahma, Varuna, Agni, Yamraj, I forget, there's 33. And from them come expansions. Each of the 33 has an expansions. So many, one crore of expansions. So the 33 becomes 33 crore. There's one Krishna in Vrindavan. When Krishna enters the Sudharma assembly house, there's one. But when he comes out of his palaces, Narada Muni saw this, he says, wait a minute, what am I seeing? 16,108 different individual unique Krishnas doing different things in each palace. They came out of the palaces, got on the highway, because it's a little difficult to go to work in 16,000 cars. It gets too jammed up on the freeway. So when Krishna entered the Dwarka freeway, going from his palace down to the state capital is Sudharma Assembly House. So he said, this is not a very intelligent way to go. We should do carpooling. In the West, they do carpooling. Four or five people club up in one car and go to work. Have you heard of this? Carpooling. So Krishna started carpooling. He started carpooling because the 16,000 said, look, boys, we're not going to get to work on time. So I said, okay, look, let's all get in one car. All right. Zoop! Krishna did the original zip file. He zipped up 16,000 folders into one zip file. So the 16,000 Krishnas became one glorious, beautiful Krishna with four arms, because the 16,108 Krishnas or Dwarkadishas came out of the palace only had two arms. Because you know when you do political things, you need four arms are better than two. But when you're loving your queens and playing with your kids, two arms are practical. The other two arms get in the way and become clumsy. So when Krishna is in intimate pastimes with his devotees, he has two arms. And when he's fighting demons or dealing with demoniac, with politics, you need as many arms as you can have to try to figure out all the diplomacy and intrigues of politics. Because when Krishna was doing politics, he needed four arms to sort out people like Shatadandva and sort out people like Satrajit and all these different funny characters running around stealing jewels and blaming him and creating rumors. So politics is full of diplomacy and rumors. So if you have four arms, you can sort it out. Hold two dacoits with two hands and two more dacoits. Catch a kura with two hands and knock off Shatadun with another one and get the other. Right? It's helpful. When Krishna kills demons in Vrindavan, does he have two arms? No, four. Vishnu kills all the demons. Because, if you were fighting, what's better, to have two arms or four? Four. So Krishna's a practical fighter. So he gets doing carpool, all the 16,000 become one, and then one four-armed Dwarkadish enters the assembly house in Sudharma. The point is that Vishnu Chakravarti, before entering all this amazing Siddhanta, he's feeling humble, as any devotee will. Before a devotee begins class, he prays to his guru for kripa, and he prays to the Vaishnavas for their blessings, and he prays to Bhagavan and to Saraswati, and Vedavyas. Narayanam, oh Narayan, you came as Vedavyas. He's your literary incarnation. Narayanam namaskritya naram cheva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tadoje mudirat. Oh Saraswati, you illuminated Brahma's heart with knowledge. You are the transcendental Divya Saraswati, the goddess of transcendental knowledge. And Narayan, you are the source of everything. You're breathing. Narayan's breathing is the source of the Vedas. And you came and wrote all this knowledge down in the age of Kali for all the stupid people like me in the form of your literary incarnation, Shaktivesha Avatar Vyasadeva. So I'm glorifying you, Vyasadeva, and I'm glorifying you, Divya Saraswati, and I'm glorifying you, Lord Narayan, who are the source of all these Vedas. From your breathing comes the Shrutis and Shrutis, and then you compile the Smritis through your expansion as various sages and rishis, and wrote it all down as Vyasadeva. And Saraswati, you're the one that illuminated my guru. You illuminated the heart of the Adi Guru Brahma with transcendental knowledge and the Gopal mantra. So now I'm somehow I've been asked and delegated or requested to speak something on this most amazing book, the Bhagavatam. So please, I petition you and beg you, please, Kripa Karo. O Saraswati Devi, O Narayan, O Vedavyas, this is your asan, this is your seat. I have no right to sit here. I'm proud and puffed up and stupid and egoistic. And I don't have any memory. I can't remember shlokas, and I don't know any bhajans, and I don't know any philosophy. I'm not sincere, and I'm a bogus Kali Chela. But somehow I've been asked to speak. So please empower my words. Mukha kavitakari yansabari smare pangagiri langidegi tari gane. By the mercy of guru, then one, a dumb man can speak poetry. Mukha kavitakari. Muk, a murka kavitakari. A murka, a stupid fool, can be a kavi, a poet. And pangum, pangum means lame, broken legged, crippled person. Pangu langate grim. Langate means giri, means mountain. He can cross over mountains. He can climb to the top of Mount Everest being crippled. And then, under tare deke, a blind man can deke see the tara, like we say astrology, asta means star, the study of the stars. So taragan means the group of stars. So the tara means you're blind. I was a blind man going to see anything. What to speak of stars in the sky at night? But all this is possible by Guru. Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate grim yat kripa tamaham vande shri gurun dinataranam paramanandamadavam. So we invoke, this is also usually a prayer that's recited from the Bhavishya Purana or Bhavishyottara Purana. Or actually, this prayer is from Bhavarta Deepika. It's from Bhavarta Deepika, which is the name of the commentary of Srila Sridhar Swami on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because before he gave his commentary, he, in Sanskrit, he penned this prayer to his guru. Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate grim yat kripa tamaham vande shri gurum dinatarnam. Mukam karoti vachalam. Mukam, if your mercy is there, Vachalam karoti, you can make words come from my mukam, from my mouth. If your mercy is not there, I can just do nothing. So Vishwanath is a pure devotee. He's an acharya, Harivallava Das, or Harivallava Vishwanath, Vinod Valarimandri. But he's feeling so unqualified to speak on Brahma's duty, so he begins his tika by saying, I am not afraid. I am not afraid if the real devotees who are relishing the great bliss. I'm not afraid if the real devotees who are relishing intense bliss by collecting loads of jewels, if they mock my stance of selling jewels or offering a few jewels. The few words I'm going to offer in praise of Purushottam Sri Krishna and his Lord Brahma, the Adi Guru, Shuddha Bhakta, I'm offering a few little pearls, but you great devotees, you have a whole stockpile of gems and rubies and emeralds and diamonds of realizations about this chapter. What am I? You may mock me. Oh, here, I'd like to make an offering. Sir, here, have one pearl. Have a Hyderabad pearl. Oh, thanks a lot. I have diamonds from Africa. I have jewels and gems. So it's just seeds. I don't have much to... My dear sir, O great Vaishnava, Rasika Vaishnava Acharyas, O Sanatana Goswami, O Jiva Goswami, O Sridhar Swami, who have come before me. I'm little Vishwanath. And this is 1700. I'm 100 years after your commentaries, or 150. Please forgive me for being so bold. And you may mock me. What is this, you little pipsqueak? What are you going to offer us? You're going to offer a little, throw in a few little Hyderabad pearls in our gem storage? So please forgive me. Meditating with determination solely upon the lotus feet of my guru, my heart desires to cross the ocean of Brahma's prayers. So this is Siddhanta Samudra. Brahma Prarthana Siddhanta Krishna Bhakti Siddhanta Samudra. These Vishwanath, from his viewpoint, the Rasika Vaishnava, the famous Rasika Vaishnava, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he is telling here in his Mangalacharana, this is his Mangalacharana, his invocatory prayers before he begins his illustrious tika on the Srimad Bhagavan Dasama Skanda, chapter 14, Brahma Stuti. Before he begins it, he says, I'm meditating on the lotus feet of my guru, but these prayers are oceanic. There's ocean means unlimited water. Ocean means unlimited depth. Ocean means unlimited creatures and species and animals and fishes swimming around. So these prayers are only 40 in number. What is this, Vishwanath? There's only 40 shlokas. Why are you saying that if I have 40 cups of water, how are you saying that 40 cups of water are Ananta Samudra? Are an unlimited ocean. You don't know? There's, in these prayers of Lord Brahma, there are millions and millions of years of tapa, millions and millions of years of realization. And he had these realizations in Sakshat Vrindavan. He had these realizations in Prakat Vrindavan. He had these realizations directly given to him by God himself. Purushottam Sri Krishna had Leela with Brahma. Is he having Leela with me? No, I'm a simple, humble Vaishnava. Am I in Krishna's Prakat Leela? No, it's 1680, it's 1700s. I'm living in Vrindavan, in Gokulananda Gera. Or I'm in the banks of Shamakuna in my Bhajan Kutir. It's 1700s. It's not 5,000 years ago. I'm not having Sakshat Darshan and Prakat Leela, Bhoman Leela of Krishna in Vrindavan. I'm in the same Vrindavan, yes, but it's Aprakat now. Brahma's not here. Krishna's not here. I'm little Vishwanath on the banks of Shamakund. What can I perceive of this? If you stand on the shore of the ocean, what can you see? Some water? And if someone says, see, how far do you think this ocean goes that you see? Oh, I've stood on the banks of the Atlantic Ocean and entered in there and rode a few waves and almost drowned. And I said, I don't know, looks like if I asked the child, my dear child, how big is the sun planet? Oh, I can tell you. If I take my index finger and my thumb and I hold it up to the sun, I can surround the sun with my index finger and pinky. My little child's, Daddy, the sun is this big. It's 2 inches in diameter. Is that right? No, it's not right. It's so many hundreds of yojanas in diameter. It's 10,000 times the size of the Earth's planet or something like that. Vast, unlimited size. To a child, the Atlantic Ocean, if he stands on the shore, he sees it. I don't know, it looks like, you see those, hey, my dear son, see those boats out there, those fishing trawlers? See those fishing trawlers out there? How far? Oh, they're really far, Daddy. They look so small. Oh, they must be, I guess that must be 2 miles. Is that the end of the ocean? The earth is flat, right? I read in the Bible, the Christians say the earth is flat. You go out 2 miles and you fall off the end. That's what they were saying. It's flat. You go out too far, you fall off the end. Like the roof of a building. If you walk too far, you fall off and crash your head on the ground. The earth is flat. Do you know that? So we laugh at it. We mock that ignorance. That's the ocean. It's unfathomable, inconceivable. How vast, how broad, how deep it is. If you stand on the shore of the ocean, can you guess how deep it is? Oh yeah, I walked in. It came up to my ankles. And I walked a little further. It goes up to my knees, up to my hips. I swim every day. It's about 3 feet deep. 3 feet deep. Well, the National Geographic Oceanic Exploration Team took a bathyscope and they went in an ocean liner into the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, and they dropped it in the ocean and it went down under the water into a trench. It's called an underwater trench. As you have the Himalayas mountains sticking out of India or Tibet or wherever they are, they go 7 miles in the air. 7 US miles, because they do miles over there, not kilometers. 7 miles is about, well, it's 6 times 12. 7 miles is 12 kilometers. The Himalaya mountains extend from the surface of the earth 12 kilometers up in the sky. Right? That's called a mountain. Well, as there's mountains in the sky, in the ocean there are crevices, underwater mountains, which go the opposite way. Instead of going up, they go down. So there are trenches that are 12 miles deep, in the 12 kilometers deep in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. They go 35 to 40,000 feet down below the surface of the bottom of the ocean. So they discovered, and even they say that we don't know where the bottom is. And we don't want to find out. There's so many strange creatures down there. This fact of they discovered in Discovery Channel, National Geographic, etc., proves that the little kid standing on the shore has no idea how wide and broad the ocean is or how deep it is. The kid says to the ocean, look, I walked in the ocean, I swim every day in the summertime, it's 3 feet deep. Father says, it's 50,000 feet deep. Huh? So this is Vishwanath. He's a little child, Shishu Vishwanath, standing on the shore of the ocean of Brahmastuti, Brahmastuti Samudra. And he's saying, wow, it's big. These prayers are big. They're unlimitedly wide and broad and unlimitedly deep. And what? I'm like a little sparrow trying to evaporate the water from the ocean. The classic story, the eggs got taken by the ocean and Garuda came and said, watch out. He's a little sparrow trying to evaporate the ocean and get a little realization. So what to do? Oh, Gurudev Kripa Karo. Meditating with determination upon solely, he says, meditating with determination only and solely on the lotus feet of my guru, my heart desires to cross the ocean of Brahma's prayers. That's a big sankalpa. Because I have to cross it to understand it. If I don't cross the ocean, can I give an accurate depiction how wide and broad it is? No. Oh, I went halfway. How big is it? 10 miles wide. Did you go further? No, that's enough. So if I go halfway across the ocean of Brahma's prayers, I won't give you full representation of the depth and bhavas and meanings. So he's praying, I have to cover the whole. If you want to understand something, you have to see the whole thing, front, back, top, and bottom, yes? And inside out. M-scan, C-scan, radar, radiation, blood tests, everything to understand this little tiny body. Now, so this is his, he's saying, now Brahma has directly realized that Nanda Nanda and Sri Krishna Vrindavan is the source of all forms of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Having attained firm devotion at the lotus feet of Krishna, Brahma profusely describes Lord Sri Krishna. Brahma said, quote, my dear Vasudev, you are the source of countless forms, unlimited, ananta rupam, and are the only worshipable Lord, Idya. Now he's commenting in his commentary on the words of the verse. The only worshipable Idya, because the verse starts out, no media. So, Brahma says, you are glorified by everyone in the universe, from me down to the grass. In order to attain you, I offer these praises unto you. So tomorrow we'll continue with Vishnu's commentary. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur ki, Jai Srila Chakravarti Pada ki, Shri Adi Guru Brahma ki, Jai Dasama Skanda Shriman Bhagavatam ki, Purushottam Bhatta ki, Jai Purushottam Sri Krishna ki, Jai 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 Shri Radhe Chan.